We have seen that the Star of Bethlehem may possibly have been a brilliant fireball, although that does not fit the biblical description, and that it may also have been an exploding star. There are objections to both these ideas, however, and we seek further. Could it have been a comet? Comets can be among the most awesome sights in the heavens. Some great comets of the past have been visible near the sun in daylight. Others have arched long, ghostly tails across the greater part of the sky. Yet, for all their impressive appearance, comets are among the least substantial of celestial objects. Their long tails are composed of extremely thin gases. The Earth has, on at least two occasions, passed through the tail of a comet without visible effect. It has been estimated that if the gases in the tail of the average comet were compressed to the density of articles we handle every day, they would fit comfortably into an ordinary suitcase. The gases of the comet head are somewhat more dense, but they too are relatively tenuous. The only solid portion of a comet appears to be the bright star-like point at the center of the head, known as the nucleus. This is composed of frozen gases, methane, ammonia, water vapor, and others, mixed with meteoric particles. It is sometimes described as a dirty snowball, although its size may be more like that of an iceberg. A large cometary nucleus may be about a mile in diameter. Comets move in flattened elliptical orbits, which bring them in close to the sun and carry them far away. In the case of great comets, visible to the naked eye, they swing out far beyond Pluto, the most distant planet, and may require several thousand years between visits to the sun. As a comet travels toward the sun from its cold sojourn in the outer reaches of the solar system, the solar warmth causes some of the frozen gases in the nucleus to evaporate. They expand, forming a gaseous head around the iceberg. Approaching still closer to the sun, the comet undergoes further change. Solar winds, a stream of particles rushing out from the sun, blow some of the gases back from the head to form the tail. How large the tail may grow and how bright the comet may become depend upon a variety of factors, including the size of the nucleus and the closeness of passage to the sun. On occasion, a comet may approach from the far side of the sun, so that we are unaware of its presence until it has rounded the sun and appears without advance notice in the morning skies. By then, it may be well developed and an awesome sight indeed. Naked eye comets always attract wide attention, and it's been suggested that one of these might have been the Star of Bethlehem. And so it might. No one knew 2,000 years ago that comets were quite ordinary members of the solar system. They were widely believed to be signs that foretold coming events. There is an ancient jingle. Eight things there be a comet brings, when on high it doth horrid range: war, famine, plague, and death to kings; wind, earthquakes, flood, and dire change. Eight things, and all of them evil, all of them things to be feared. Psychologically, then, comets would seem to be wrong as the heavenly sign that would foretell the coming of a savior for all mankind. And when we examine the record of those years in which we are interested, we find that there were no bright comets. Halley's Comet, which last appeared in 1910, flared in the skies in 11 BC. But as we have seen, that was too early. And another bright comet was visible in 4 BC. But that was too late. So comets seem to fade as a possibility, and we are left to continue our search. Before we go on, however, it might be well to consider exactly what is this star we seek, and who saw it. The word star is used 4 times in the biblical account in Matthew. There's no question about that, but there is a question as to what is meant. We are all familiar with the way in which words undergo changes in meaning, in which old words are adapted to new uses, and new words are invented for new needs. This is not a modern process. It has been going on since language began. And one of the words that has undergone a change in meaning through the centuries is the word star. As we use it today, it refers specifically to one of those twinkling objects in the night sky which we know to be distant suns. As it was used 2,000 years ago, however, it had a much broader application. Then, a star might be not only a distant sun, but a planet, or even the sun or the moon. It might be any strange light in the sky, an oddly illuminated cloud, a bolt of lightning, even a close passage between 2 planets, or a grouping of several planets. Who saw the Star of Bethlehem? Not everyone, by any means. The shepherds didn't see it. To them, an angel appeared. King Herod hadn't seen it, for when the wise men came to him, he questioned them diligently as to what they had seen and when. Plainly, if the king had never heard of it, it was an object that caused no great stir in Judea. Who did, then, see this Christmas star? Only the wise men, if we are to accept the evidence offered in Matthew. And who were the wise men? Tradition has it that they were magi, presumably priests of Zoroaster, who came from the land that was then known as Chaldea, but is more familiar to us as Persia or Iran. Magi. The word comes from the same root as our words magic and magician. And magicians they were, practitioners of many an obscure art, including the pseudo-science of astrology. In our age, when we know the nature of the sun and the planets, when we can map the movements of the planets for centuries into the past or future, it seems strange to believe that their positions could have any effect on the destinies of nations on the Earth. But 2,000 years ago, things were different. No one knew more about the planets than this. They were star-like objects, differing from the stars in that they seldom twinkled, and they appeared to have the freedom to wander in the heavens, while other stars remained rooted in their positions. This ability to move had a magical, godlike quality, and evidence that the planets were associated with the gods lies in their very names, which represent ancient deities. If the movements of the planets had any significance, men thought, it must be to inform those who could read the signs of what the fates held in store. This, the wise men, as astrologers, presumably believed. This, and a prophecy shared with one of the world's great and enduring religions. The Zoroastrian faith, even then some 800 years old, included a belief in the prophecy that there would be born under the Jews a king, and that his coming would be heralded by a sign in the heavens. Attributing this background to the wise men, it is interesting to trace the movements of the planets in the sky during 7 and 6 BC, to see what they saw and guess what they might have read into it. During the first months of the year 7, Jupiter and Saturn emerged from the glare of the rising sun as morning stars in the eastern sky. Saturn was considerably to the east of Jupiter when they first became visible, but their positions in relation to one another changed slowly, morning after morning. Saturn, at a distance of some 887 million miles from the Sun, requires 29 and a half years to go once around the Sun, while Jupiter, at a distance of 484 million miles, requires only 12 years. As a result, Jupiter's normal eastward motion among the stars is considerably faster than that of Saturn. And during the spring of 7 BC, it appeared to overtake Saturn in the sky. On May 29th of that year, it seemed to pass Saturn. The two planets stood relatively close together in the heavens in what astronomers and astrologers alike call a conjunction, and in a confirmation, incidentally, which fitted the old use of the word star. What might the wise men have seen in this close passage of two planets? We know enough about the old astrology to draw some conclusions. Jupiter represented the chief of the gods. And Saturn? Saturn was the star that governed the destinies of the tribes of Israel. Their meeting place was in the constellation of Pisces the fish, a constellation that was known to the ancient star watchers as the House of the Hebrews. It was there that the chief of the gods paused next to the Star of Israel, a meeting that may well have been fraught with significance in the minds of astrologers who believed in that old prophecy. Jupiter, of course, moved on to the east after May 29th, leaving Saturn behind. But now, another well-known fact of modern astronomy came into play. The Earth is only 93 million miles from the Sun, much closer to it than Jupiter. And the Earth, of course, goes around the Sun once in a year, while Jupiter requires 12 years. As a consequence, the Earth passes Jupiter annually as the two planets speed around their circular tracks in space. When this happens, Jupiter seems, for a brief time, to reverse its course in the heavens and move backward, or to the west. This retrograde motion, as it is called, is easily understood. It's the same effect one obtains when passing another car on the highway, a car that is going in the same direction, but moving more slowly. As they pass, the slower car seems to move backward with relation to the faster one. The same effect holds true in space. Both planets are moving in the same direction, but the slower one, Jupiter, appears to move backward as seen from the faster one, the Earth. So it was that after Jupiter had moved well to the east of Saturn in the spring of 7 BC, it appeared to slow down, come to a halt, and, as the summer rolled by, move back to the west. It passed Saturn again on September 29th. We know today why it happened, but to the wise men, it could have seemed only a whim of the gods that again the two planets stood in conjunction, again in the constellation we call Pisces. Jupiter continued to move westward, passing well beyond Saturn. But soon, the movements of Earth and Jupiter canceled out the apparent backward motion, and Jupiter again appeared to slow down in the heavens, come to a halt, and reverse its course to the east. This time, it passed Saturn on December 4th. And for the third time in a year, the planets stood together in Pisces. By then, in late autumn, they were high in the evening sky. Now, however, Jupiter was moving to the east. There would be no more turning back. The distance between the two planets in the sky steadily increased. But one more event was still to occur. As Jupiter and Saturn separated, another celestial wanderer appeared on the scene. This was Mars, the red planet. Closer to the Sun than either Jupiter or Saturn, Mars seems to move much more rapidly in the sky than they, for it needs only 2 years to circle the Sun. Traveling eastward, it overtook Jupiter and Saturn before they could move far apart, so that by February, in the year 6 BC, all three planets stood together in a rather loose triangle in the western sky. And this, too, in the house of the Hebrews. These were unusual events. A simple conjunction between Jupiter and Saturn occurs only once in about 20 years. It would rarely take place in Pisces. A triple conjunction of the two planets, such as the one in 7 BC, can never occur more often than once in 125 years. And usually, the interval is much longer than that. A massing of the planets, such as the triangle that appeared in the western sky in 6 BC, is even more unusual. It occurs once in approximately 800 years. Because of their possible astrological significance, their rarity, and the timing, it has been suggested that this entire sequence of events might have been the Christmas star of the biblical account. It is true that the final massing of the planets occurred low in the western skies, and that there is some question as to whether it would have been visible against the sunset glow at maximum effect. It is also true that the wise men are quoted in Matthew as saying, "We have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him." But many modern biblical scholars feel that this phrasing really means, "We have seen his star while we were in the east, while we were in Chaldea," and not, "We have seen his star in the eastern sky." If this is so, it may be that the first conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn in Pisces on May 29th, 7 BC, was the first appearance of the Christmas star, that it may have been sufficient to start the wise men with their belief in the prophecy of the birth of a king of the Jews on their long journey to the city of David, where prophecy had it the birth would occur. It may be that the subsequent conjunctions on September 29th and December 4th strengthened their resolve in the purpose of their journey, and that the massing of the planets, if it was visible, may have been the final appearance of the star in February of 6 BC. In support of the idea, it is pointed out that no one in Judea had reported seeing the star, and that the Jews who lived there did not believe in the astrology of the East. They might well have observed casually the passing of the planets overhead, but they would have attached no significance to it. The wise men, steeped in the ancient astrological lore, would have attempted to extract every possible bit of meaning from what they saw. And so, it may have been. But of course, we do not know that it was. It is possible, too, that the Christmas star was a brilliant bolide, or a nova, or a comet. The theories of a nova or a comet have strong supporters. We can never really be sure. Perhaps that is just as well. For whether we want to believe in a natural origin for the Star of Bethlehem is largely a matter of personal belief and religious conviction. Some people feel more comfortable believing that there was something in the sky at that time, something that can be explained by modern science and which would account for the biblical story. Others prefer to believe that the wondrous star described in Matthew was beyond scientific explanation. And this much is true. If you accept the story told in the Bible as the literal truth, then the Christmas star could not have been a natural apparition. Its movement in the sky and its ability to stand above and mark a single building, these would indicate that it was not a normal phenomenon, but a supernatural sign, one given from on high, and one that science will never be able to explain.